And hello, welcome to the Princes That Were Promised. I am one of your hosts, Sean, and with me, as always, is John. And we are talking a subject that I believe is right up your alley, John.
I love the Night of Lampetry. I love the Harrenhal, Tourney of Harrenhal. This is a huge story.
Yeah. We get the bulk of it in A Storm of Swords, though it is mentioned in...
Game of Thrones, yeah. and then chapter actually mentions like...
What is it, in the Black Cells?
Yeah.
Although he may mention it before that.
But it was one of those... people have talked about it, like, because it's one of those renowned tournaments.
Right. It's one of those pieces of Song of Ice and Fire lore that all of the characters, for the most part, are familiar with. Or at least all of the older generation characters. Although I don't know that Stannis was there, but it's not really Stannis' cup of tea. Having fun.
Yeah, I'm not going to a goddamn party.
Pass.
Where's Nighthawk?
Yeah.
Where the Hawk's name was.
Proudwing. Yeah. Proudwing. Just gonna chill with Proudwing. It's cool. I don't want to go. The Tourney of Harrenhal was also known as Lord Wendt's Great Tournament. The Wendts were actually the seventh noble house to rule Harrenhal. We talked about Harrenhal in the Balin Greyjoy podcasts that we did.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Right? We were talking about like the history of the Iron Men. And House Hor was actually from the Iron Islands, Ironborn. And they conquered their way into the Riverlands, and they built this great castle. The moment they were done, that's when Aegon showed up with his dragon. But after House Hor, Coherys, House Harroway, House Towers, House Strong, Lothstan was the sixth noble house to rule Harrenhal. And do you recall the tale of Lady Danelle Lothstan, who went mad during the reign of King Maekar I? This is in a Brienne chapter, Feast for Crows. Brienne actually ends up with the shield. Remember, she gets the shield?
Right.
That's got the black bats of Lothstan. The black bat, singular, because the Wents have 9 black bats on their shield. Mm. And the reason that their shield is so similar to the Lothstans is they were knights in service to the Lothstans. And when she went mad, the Wents received Harrenhal for their role in defeating the Lothstans. The Wents aren't the last house to rule Harrenhal, obviously. We know that Peter Baelish is now the House Baelish is the ruling house.
Baelish.
And they haven't even fucking been in the castle yet. I don't think he's got any intention of ever going in the castle.
No.
I think the Wents just fizzled out because they don't have any more kids.
Right.
That's the case. Yeah, it wasn't something where like Tywin fucking went and pulled a root and stem whack job. I don't think it was anything like that. It was just they had no more children. But I widely believe that Harrenhal is cursed. From the moment it was finished being built, it's had bad luck. This is before Song of Ice and Fire, and they're the seventh house to rule Harrenhal. Each house meeting with a somewhat horrific end.
Mm-hmm.
In 281 AC, that was the year of the false spring. The weather became warmer. The people of Westeros were of the assumption that winter was ending.
Mm-hmm.
And spring was finally here. And what we know about Westeros is it's not 3 months of winter, 3 months of spring. It's 3 years of winter, or 7 years of winter, or 10 years of winter. Generally, the idea is however long the summer is.
That's how long the winter is going to be.
Plus some. Generally. That's the rule of thumb. This winter was an especially difficult winter, and it seemed like it was coming to the end. As Ned puts it, when he's in the Black Cells, he could see the deep green of the grass and the smell of pollen on the wind, warm days, cool nights, and the sweet taste of wine. And that's a pretty good summation of first warm night, you don't need to wear your jacket, and like you just feel it in the air, like mm-hmm. the nice weather's coming on. I don't know how many years of winter they had experienced. It was a number of years of winter.
There's the narration there. What's the name again? Does the narration?
Who does the narration for?
The books.
Oh, Roy Dotrice.
Yeah.
Oh, dude, he's awesome.
It was the year of the false spring.
Yeah, yeah. These are complex books, Roy. Something else notable that happened in 281 AC is the Kingswood Brotherhood was defeated. And this is the band of outlaws that roam the Kingswood. Mm-hmm. The Smiling Knight, Simon Toyne.
Arthur Dayne killing the Smiling Knight, right?
Right, Arthur Dayne.
That was one of the things that really gave him the...
Arthur Dayne?
That's possible. I could have sworn Arthur Dayne killed the Smiling Knight.
Yeah, you might be right. It might have been Arthur Dayne.
Because that was like his biggest...
Oh, you know what? No, Barristan Selmy was remembering it. That's what it was. Barristan Selmy's remembering it.
Because that was the big thing that really gave the prestige to Arthur Dayne that this guy, is the best. Yeah. Because I guess the Smiling Knight was kind of like a, what, like a ruthless.
He was really good. These guys are causing a lot of trouble. They had attacked Princess Ilya's caravan. They had kidnapped a lot of noble people. They were causing a lot of damage. And finally, King Ares just sent out like 5 Kingsguard with however many men to just go take care of them. Just get rid of them. Fucking just do it. And it came down to Sir Arthur Dayne and Jaime Lannister, not yet a knight, against the Smiling Knight and Simon Toyn. And they both defeated them. And Arthur Dayne knighted Jaime Lannister then and there. The small folk that lived in the Kingswood, mm-hmm. protecting the Kingswood Brotherhood, they were hiding them. So Kingswood Brotherhood had the people's protection. The people believed in them. Whatever they were doing, mm-hmm. I guess it was like a kind of like a Robin Hood situation.
Yeah, right.
And it took Sir Arthur Dayne speaking with the people and meeting the people and getting the people to believe in him for them to finally give up where the Brotherhood was. Which is a nice example of what kind of guy Sir Arthur Dayne is. And he's another one of those characters that we never meet, but we have a really good idea of his character and we like him. I know he's one of your favorites, right? Arthur Dayne?
Probably around there, top 12-ish.
Yeah. But you never see him.
It's Arthur Dayne.
Yeah. Greatest knight in Westeros. But right there with Rhaegar Targaryen, Lyanna Stark, you know, just these characters that you never, and you never will meet, you just hold them this esteem because they're just so cool. Tywin Lannister resigns as Hand to the King and returns to Casterly Rock in 281, and Lord Owen Meriwether is sworn into the office of Hand. An 18-year-old Ned Stark comes down from the Eyrie to Harrenhal to see this great tournament. His family's there. Robert comes down with him. It's
a who's who.
Well, just picture the feeling, like after this many years of winter, and now everybody springs here. All right, the Kingswood Brotherhood was defeated. All right, the old Kingsguard member died, but here's this young guy, Jaime, who's helped defeat the Kingswood Brotherhood, and he's going to take their place. All these great things are kind of happening. It's like mm-hmm. Westeros is emerging from the winter, and this is like the precipice of it, is this tourney. And Harrenhal, as we've said before, is the largest castle in Westeros. There's nothing like it anywhere. Even destroyed, even half destroyed by Dragonfire, mm-hmm. there's still nothing like it. So the reason that Lord Walter Went hosts a tournament to celebrate the name day of his maiden daughter, who I don't think that they have the name of in canon, because who needs a little...
Well, you know, like a character here that, you know, don't have names.
Sometimes you just press on. Or I forget to put a name and forget to go back, and here you go. The tourney was announced a year beforehand, after Lord Walter Went was visited by Sir Oswald Went of the Kingsguard, who was his brother. And the rewards were 3 times greater than those offered by Lord Tywin Lannister in the tourney to honor Prince Viserys' birthday at Lannisport in 276 AC. But the lavish prizes offered brought hundreds of challengers to the tourney. Walter Went wanted to show off his castle and his sons, and he was real proud of all this, and he should be, because the Wents are kind of like one of those up jump houses. They're not an ancient house by any means. They were not lords. They weren't really even a house until they were made a house because of their role in defeating the Lothstons. The Wents are overreaching here, because this tournament, it should be a celebration, but it turns out to be kind of a fraud. And a lot of things about it are fraudulent. The year of the false spring. It's not really spring. Winter comes back. The night of the Laughing Tree. We don't know. We don't even know who to think it is. The Queen of Love and Beauty, the reigning Queen of Love and Beauty, who is Lord Walter Went's daughter, whose name day they're celebrating. She has 4 of her brothers and her uncle, Sir Oswald Went, were defending her title, Queen of Love and Beauty, and they all failed to defend it. We know what happens with the Crown of Blue Roses, who he's supposed to give the title of Love and Beauty to, and he doesn't. Misrepresentation. So it turns out when people think of the Tourney of Harrenhal, they don't think of it as a fond memory. A lot going on here. Real good soap opera drama stuff. Real good Song of Ice and Fire lore. But it is a who's who. You have Prince Rhaegar Targaryen.
The night before the tournament, it's the first night that Rhaegar and Lyanna are in the same room together. The Dragon Prince sing a song so sad it made the Wolf Maid sniffle.
Right.
They made Benjen laugh at her. Oh, like she poured wine on him and stormed off.
Right. Prince Rhaegar is in action. We know the Knight of the Laughing Tree. This is the mystery knight. Lord Bronze Jon Royce, Brandon Stark, Sir Arthur Dayne, Sir Barristan Selmy, John Arryn, Robert Baratheon, John Connington, Jonathor Dairy, Arthur Dayne, Ashara Dayne, Gerald Hightower, Ian Hunter, I have no idea who that is, Jaime Lannister.
Neither is this George.
Here's another thing with the falsities, is King Ares makes it seem like he's celebrating Jaime's ascension to Kingsguard, but then he's sent home. In his little fucking lover's quarrel with Tywin, he doesn't want Lannisters getting any spotlight on this day. Sir Richard Lonmouth, Ilya Martell, Lewin Martell, Oberyn Martell, Sir Lord Howland Reed. Actually, I didn't know that he was a lord. I thought he was a master. Lord Jon Rice, Barristan Selmy, Benjen Stark, Brandon, Eddard, Lyanna, Aerys the Mad, Mace Tyrell. It is basically 7 days, 5 days set up for the joust, which is always the main event. You had a seven-sided melee in the ancient style. Lord Robert Baratheon wins that one. You have an archery contest. You have an axe-throwing contest, a horse race, a tourney of singers. You have a mummer's show. This is like the tourney of tourneys.
Right. This is everything, you know, that...
It's like fucking WrestleMania of tourneys, yeah. Man. Yeah. And Tourney of Harrenhal, we get the bulk of the story, the most complete picture of it from...
The story in Storm of Swords when Mira and George and Rhi were exchanging stories with Bran.
They're just bored trying to tell stories.
And they tell the story to Bran. The end, they're kind of like, wait a minute, Ned never told you this story? You don't know the story of Harrenhal because... Well, it makes Bran so stupid in this. It's like, yeah. The story is being told in the Wild Wolf, the Quiet Wolf. It's all nicknames.
Yeah.
You don't get anyone's real name. The Reeds ask Bran, how would you have the story end?
Right.
And Bran says, oh, well, I'd have the Mystery Knight defeat all the challengers and name the Wolf Maid, the Queen of Love and Beauty. Then Mira says, she was, but that's a sadder story.
We know that the Reed children know more about the Stark
feeling that Jojen and Mira know that Jon is Rhaegar and Lyanna's son.
Howland Reed is their father. And What reason would Howland Reed have for telling them all this? Dies?
Yeah, if he dies, and listen, Ned's not going to say anything.
It's possible that Howland Reed is able to see that he might need to testify to something. He might need to provide the proof, the evidence. And if he's dead, if he can't do that, you know.
Someone has to.
Right. Take us through the story as best you can. I know it starts with he wanted to see the world.
He didn't want to. He was visiting God's eye. He was, you know, God knows where he was. Maybe simple, the children of the forest, man. Maybe he was talking with. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you hear all these, you know, the horns and the trumpets going off. There's this huge tournament going on. And
well, he traveled from the neck to the God's eye.
Mm-hmm. But he goes to the tournament. Mm-hmm. And there at the tournament, he comes in there and
He's just
little dragon man, you know, yeah. What he had, a spear probably or something. That was it. Right. You know, no fine weapons, no anything.
So what would you compare Kranig men to? Let's put it in terms of like eighth grade class. Basketball player, looking guy.
Yeah, eighth grade crazy. You just had a new like foreign exchange student come in who doesn't really fit in.
From Asia, really good at math, but like
that's just, who Howland Reed is.
Yeah. That's
so anything he says is going to be like, oh, okay.
Whatever.
Yeah, 2 + 2 = 4. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Welcome to America, motherfucker. He's presented as an innocent soul, and he's presented as not strong at all, but not weak. Not so much frightened or intimidated as he is just in awe of how big this castle is and all of these banners and all of these knights and all these people. Like, he's never seen anything like this before. He's totally out of his element. And while he wants to see it so badly, it's just overwhelming for him.
Mm-hmm.
And he winds up being approached by three squires.
The three squires. I always forget the freaking... The Porcupine Knight, he had, you know, the one from how the twins, you know, obviously a Frey. And I always forget the other one. I can never remember.
Wherever there's bullying in Westeros, you know, there's Freys involved.
Yeah, exactly. And I think even the story, it says so. And, like, Bran makes notion of, oh, the Freys.
Yeah.
You know, they start picking on Highland. I guess they start roughing him up. They beat him up a little bit. And,
right.
You know, next thing it's like, they all say, here is this, that's my father's man. You're kicking Hal, the She-Wolf.
Fuck yeah.
The She-Wolf laid into the squires with the tourney of swords, scattering them all.
That's my father's man.
Yeah.
Warden of the North.
Yeah.
Stark's bitch.
And then it's Lyanna Stark holding her own against three males.
I don't think that they would have... I mean, I'm sure she laced into them, like she probably pushed them away and laced into them verbally.
Well, it says that she...
Laced into them?
Laid into them.
Laid into them, okay. All right.
So I think she actually had to hit one of them.
I'm sure she did. I don't think that they went
to they would be... Yeah, yeah, I don't think so either. But at the same time, they probably... It's kind of twofold.
Rickard Stark's.
Yeah, it's Rickard Stark's daughter. Yeah. Oh my God, she... Are you okay? Yeah. The guy's bloodied over here. Yeah. All right, we'll live the fight of the day.
And she's like, don't make me get my brother Brandon.
Yeah,
he'll kill you.
Yeah.
He'll kill you.
He should have killed Baelish. Yeah. Thank you, freaking Catelyn Tully. Sorry, sidebar.
Please don't kill him. That's a good one, bro. Please don't kill him. He's harmless.
Oh, God, no. Catelyn Tully. Anyway,
So, Lyanna, I don't think George is making any attempt at covering up who these people are. And if you're with it at all,
if you know the story, you already know who the She-Wolf is. Especially if you didn't get it then.
When she describes...
When they go in and they describe the Wild Wolf, the Quiet Wolf, and all that...
Wolf pup.
You kind of realize, wait a minute, Rickard had 4 children. That's the Wild, Quiet, She-Wolf, and... Oh, that's 4. I mean, if you might not get it right then and then. Later on at night when they go into the camps and all that, and they go in, like, oh, I'll take you under my father, you know, or, you know, go see my brothers. You know what? If you don't piece together that it's the Starks, it's Rickard's children, then you know what? Close the book up. Stop reading. Go read something else. Because you know what? You just don't even deserve to finish reading it at that point. Now, was it Benjen or was it Ned that even said to him, how come you didn't fight back? Well, you know, I didn't want to bring dishonor to my house. I thought I'd embarrass myself.
Well, Lyanna first says something along the lines of, enjoy yourself. You have every right to be here. Don't listen to those guys. You're under our protection. You're protected by the
Starks. You're Stark man now. You're a Stark man.
Fucking Starks.
They say like you should go into the, you should listen to Tormund and get revenge on them, and then Hal Reed's like, well, I'm not much of a fighter. I don't ride on a horse. We're a Kragan man. We don't go on horses. So then they have that feast that night, and everyone's there, and Prince Rhaegar starts singing a song, and of course, you know, 9 out of 10 Rhaegar songs are sad songs. You know, it's always sad and like, you know, like melancholy songs like, this will be the dawn of the dead and we'll die.
It's the sound of silence.
Yeah, like he'd be up for that song. Yeah. The Dragon Prince sang a song so sad it made the wolf mate sniffle, which caused Benjen to poke fun at her. And then like Lyanna, like typical like Arya thing, Arya basically into Lyanna, they see where they get it from. Pours the wine on Benjen's head.
During the feast, Prince Rhaegar Targaryen performed a sad and beautiful song that made Lyanna weep. Benjen teased her for crying and she poured wine over his head. A recruiting officer of the Night's Watch was there trying to convince knights to join the watch.
Right.
Interesting. Robert Baratheon was involved in a drinking contest with Richard Lonmouth. Mira notes in passing that Robert won the contest. Crannogmen focuses his attention on Ashara Dane, a maid with laughing purple eyes. They don't say Ashara Dane by name. They say a maid with laughing purple eyes.
Yeah.
I never picked up that it was Ashara Dane. I had to read analyses of Night of the Laughing Tree to realize it was Ashara Dane. That's one of those things that's like a third reread for me to finally figure that out. A companion of Elia, who was dancing in turns with various partners, talking about Ashara Dane.
Right.
So dancing in terms of various partners, that's where you get Barriss and Selmy.
Right.
Ned.
That's where you get Ned too afraid to go up to talk to her to get a dance, and then Brandon.
A member of the King's Guard, either her brother Arthur Dane or infatuated Barriss and Selmy. Oberyn Martell, a Red Snake. John Connington, Lord of the Griffins. And lastly, Eddard Stark. Eddard was too shy to ask her for a dance, so Brandon asked her on behalf of his brother. During the feast, the Crannog Man and Lyanna recognized the 3 bullying squires.
Right.
One served the Pitchfork Knight, House Hay. One served the Porcupine, House Blount. And the last boy served a Knight of the 2 Towers, like you said, House Frey. She pointed them out to her brothers, and Benjen offered to find the Crannog Man a horse and armor
to avenge himself.
Right. He was indecisive. His pride wanted him to get revenge, but he was afraid of making a fool for himself and bringing shame to his people. He was not a knight. He knew he wasn't a knight. He was not used to horses and lances. Before going to sleep at the tent of Eddard, the Quiet Wolf had offered him hospitality. We know that Eddard and Helen Reed are, I don't know if they're really good friends, but they have a very loyal relationship.
Yeah.
We know
this
that.
This is where it starts this. Right. And I guess this would be one of the reasons why Ned would bring Helen Reed with him to the Tower of Joy, because pretty much, you know, Ned means Helen owes a lot to the Stark. And to Lyanna. Knowing that Lyanna's there, again, going with my possible theory that Ned kind of knew what was going on at Tower of Joy. That knew that there might have been a baby. So he knew he had to bring trusted people like Helen Reed that he could trust.
There's no question that he could trust.
Helen's not going to betray Lyanna. He's not going to try the Starks.
Fight to the death for Lyanna.
Yeah.
Before he went to sleep, he prayed to the old gods. During the first 2 days of the tournament, the Porcupine Knight, Pitchfork Knight, and the Knight of 2 Towers each won a place among the champions, all in jousting. Mirror says that the Crannog Man prayed to the old gods for guidance. And then she says that a mystery knight short of stature appears in the list.
Right.
A fake
knight. Wearing a mismatch armor.
Mismatch armor bits.
The shield of the, they call it the Laughing Tree, because actually the shield of the old gods.
His shield was blazoned with the image of a white weirwood with a laughing red face. The tale mentions that the Crannog Man had with him a leathern shield, but does not specify whether this was the same shield. The Mystery Knight challenged and defeated all three of the previously mentioned knights, winning custody over their horses and armor. And this is another interesting part about the knights, which you, I didn't learn until I read the Duncan Egg stories, is when you enter the jousts, if you lose, you lose your armor and you lose your horse. And then you have to ransom it back. Mm-hmm. So if a knight loses, he has to pay money to get his stuff back. So right. That's why life as a
commoner, you don't really see them go on the list because they don't have the money. If they lose, no. They don't have the money to gain it back. They might get the money spent throughout their life to actually be, oh, look, I got a shield, but they can't afford to lose it. That's I made a shield myself. Can't really afford to lose it because they don't have the resources to.
That's the thing. It's kind of like, and there's an entry fee too.
So it's like you can.
You have to be a knight. So it can't be a commoner because you have to be a knight. Yeah. It's interesting because it's kind of like NHL hockey. Like I could never have been a hockey player because my parents didn't have the money for the skates and the gear and all that stuff. Like you need to put in an investment just to get the skill to get to that level.
Right.
You need to be a knight. You need to have the entry fee and you need to be able to lose your horse and your armor and not have that go for broke. But a lot of these knights that travel around just participating in these tourneys, they don't. They have just enough money to get in, and if they lose, then that's it. Then they're done.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not going to spoil Duncan Egg for you, but it's interesting how the whole process works. None of them were particularly popular, so the small folk cheered for this mysterious Knight of the Laughing Tree. When the defeated trio sought to ransom back their former property, the knight declared his terms, that they ought to teach their rude squire's honor. His voice sounded booming through his helm. The trio proceeded to chastise their squire sharply. The mystery knight attracted unwanted attention. Robert Baratheon and Richard Lonmouth were determined to unmask him, while Ares II was certain that the man was his enemy. Because this is the beginning of Paranoid.
Yeah, he's
Paranoid King Ares. By the next morning, the knight had disappeared, and angry Ares sent Rhaegar to search for the vanished knight. But only his shield could be found abandoned in a tree. So,
first off, right there, it just...
It's an awesome story.
Awesome story.
Awesome story, because they don't use names.
Can't trust freaking Robert to do anything right.
No.
He couldn't find them. We don't know what the song that was.
First off, these are the theories based on what we know about the story. The Mystery Knight must have been someone who knew about Howland Reed's experience with the Squires and was motivated to avenge him. For the fans, this points to the Stark siblings and Howland Reed himself, as the books do not mention anyone else noticing the incident. Fine. The Knight's height was below average, or else it would not be noted in the first place.
So it's not Brandon or Nedard.
The mismatched armor would point to the knight not having access to regular armor, or having regular armor with telltale markings on it. The booming voice is most likely not the regular voice of the knight. The weirwood image implies a connection to the old gods and the north. The knight was competent enough at the joust to defeat three knights who had made it through the first day of the tourney, but as none of them were particularly well known, he need not have been unusually skilled. Mira was surprised that Bran had never heard the story before, which suggests that the knight may have been either a Stark or someone close to the family. So we knew all that.
It's Lyanna.
Pretty much guaranteed.
I'm sorry. If it's not Lyanna, then you know what? I'll scrub off my tattoo with rock salt.
Oh, dude. Better hope George Martin doesn't
hear this. Always leave these things a little open.
I mean, they were just pressuring me for the book, so you know what?
I just changed it to being... Well, let's go back down there and look at the facts. Let's look at the theories and let's look at clustering.
You want to go one by one?
Let's go by one by one.
The Mystery Knight must have been someone who knew about Howland Reed's experience with the Squires and was motivated to avenge him.
So you have Stark Children plus Howland.
Mostly you have Howland and Lyanna.
Right.
Right, and then...
But we'll keep it open then. We have five people. The Star Children plus Highland.
His height was below average, or else it would not be noted in the first place.
Knocks out Brandon and Ned.
Does it knock out... Well, Ned was 18.
Yeah.
So it's three. So we get Lyanna, Howland, and Benjen.
Yep.
We won't knock out yet just for...
Well, he's probably like 10 years old right now or something like that. He's probably 12. He's 11 or 12, so his height... He still could be short in stature, so I'll keep him up there.
No, he's definitely short in stature, but I mean, he might be too young to enter, but we know Barrison entered at...
Right.
Like age. Anyway, the mismatched armor would point to the knight not having access to regular armor or having regular armor with telltale markings on it. Now, this doesn't really...
It eliminates Benjen.
Why?
Why wouldn't Benjen wear the Stark armor? But if you still want to keep Benjen up there, I will. But it eliminates Benjen in my eyes. You don't want unwanted attention to the Starks, unwanted attention to the Starks. So I'll keep him up there.
Well, it eliminates in my eyes too, but for the sake of fact, I gotta keep him up there. It's halfway eliminated.
Yeah, he's like, he's hanging on by a thread now. He's got one hand on the rooftop.
The booming voice was most likely not the regular voice of the night. Okay, here's my most problematic.
And I'm gonna destroy it. Okay. So don't worry.
Well, Benjen, there's no way he has a booming voice at 12. Because he's in puberty.
Right.
Right. If you try to do the booming voice, most likely his voice would crack, or he just doesn't have the balls yet.
I'm taking Benjen completely out the last two.
Fine with me. So we have Liana and we have Hallen Reed. I know I can make a booming voice. I have a deep voice. I know at age, figure he's the same age as Ned, so he's 18, 17, 16, something like that. You can make a booming voice at that age. You can definitely do that. Do you disagree?
You can.
Now, for a girl to make a booming voice, could be done, I guess. If she practice it, it's not outside the realm of possibility. I don't think that eliminates either one of them.
It doesn't really firmly eliminate Hallen yet, but some people say the booming voice means it can't be Liana. Mm. This is how it's Liana. Because we know, all you debunkers out there, when we meet Bran of Tarth, Renly's little festival, right. whatever you want to call it.
Renly's tourney of
Right, Renly's tourney.
Yeah.
Brienne's voice is booming through the helm. Because when you put a helm on, it acts like an echo,
right.
Like a bass.
Right.
So it's very possible and easy for a girl to stretch her voice up and it comes out booming. So you don't hear the real voice. That's the reason, or why you even have that Brienne, that Renly tournament, is to show Brienne's voice through a booming voice.
I think with Brienne, is she's such a big woman.
I know, but it's not really.
The better argument is the helm.
It's combination. It's a combination. But it's to show that it can be done. That you can't. It's to.
Shallon thought it was a man.
Obviously, Brienne's bigger. She can have more of a distinctful male voice. But it's the show already off the fact that, by hearing the voice, Callan thinks it's a man. So, we go back to the Tormel Arrol. Well, we think it's him because it's a booming voice. It's him.
Right.
We got rid of all that. So, we got rid of the three to the four Starks. We have Hallen and Liana. We know Hallen has probably never been on a horse before.
Let's go through the last three because that's probably the one that gives it away. The Weirwood image implies a connection to the old gods in the north. So, that doesn't really...
Both of them are north.
Mira was surprised that Bran had never heard the story before, which suggests that the knights that they might may have been either Stark or someone close to the family. So
someone kind of eliminates Hallen.
It does. And then he was confident enough that the joust to defeat three knights who had made it through the first day of the tournament, but as none of them were particularly well known, he need not have been unusually skilled. So he had to be good enough to defeat above average knights, and Hallen had never ridden a horse before, right?
Yeah. And we know from your boy, Jamie Lannister, says that jousting is mainly 90% horseback riding.
Right.
And Liana, just like Brandon, were known as centaurs, that they were great on horseback. And we know that Liana was good with a sword. You put all this together, and it's getting quite obvious that Liana was the knight in the Laughing Tree. She wouldn't be able to wear the Stark armor because Rickard would never allow his daughter to wear.
Never.
You're not wearing that. Kind of goes hand in hand, like what we were talking about, like the Bran flashback when she's being up on Benjen. She's telling Benjen, don't get caught, father, don't tell father, because he's going to get upset at me that I'm out here fighting with you.
She's daddy's little girl.
Yeah.
Don't want to upset her dad. You're
daddy's little girl. So now, other reason why it's pretty much confirmed in my eyes that it's Liana. Up until this point of the jousting. Ares, who thinks that the knight was threatening to him, sends his son, the Dragon Prince, to seek the man, and all they ever found was his painted shield. In that line, aren't they just screaming out his, as we should question his? It's also jumping out that it's like we should also question, did he really not find the knight?
Right.
Did he find the knight? Because the very next day, all of a sudden, Rhaegar Targaryen decides, get the steward of the squires. I'm going in. Get that luxurious Targaryen armor.
Right, he doesn't enter until
the next after day. After that next day.
I was under the assumption that Rhaegar had entered from the get-go.
No, he was not. He did not enter. He only entered after.
So what the fuck happened here? Okay, because
we have to assume that Rhaegar found the knight, unmasked the knight, and saw that it was Liana.
How does that inspire him? I can understand that he's got to
go back to the prophecy. He's got to rethink that prophecy. I just saw this one take on three male squires. I have this prophecy that my child is going to be this warrior that's going to lead the battle for the dawn. We don't know much, and I'm hoping George really starts giving us something. What was that quote for about Rhaegar? Something changed. I require a sword and armor.
Right.
Something changed him. So we have to know what changed. What did he see to do all this stuff?
Something that changed his life up. Right. The trajectory of his life and drove his life forward
right.
in a certain direction.
Right.
Yeah.
And Elia Martell, she's a sweet lady. She's a nice, kind.
She's a six.
She sees...
So she's solid eight.
No, she's probably a solid. I think she was pretty hot. Yeah. Well, I mean, beautiful.
Well, Martells are generally.
Yeah. As we all know.
Yeah.
He has to see Lyanna like, this is on horseback? With a sword?
Well, he's so...
This is it?
He's a guy that believes in signs, obviously.
Yeah, right? He's all about, this is a sign.
Right. But it must have been a sign he was already looking for, or waiting for.
And then when he sees that, all of a sudden he enlists in the tournament. And then we've talked about it on one of our previous podcasts. You know, there's certain theories out there that there could be two trains of thoughts. One was the rubies that Rhaegar has are make him more invincible and you can't beat him. But that doesn't explain how Robert kills him then, because he wore the same armor.
Yeah,
he wore. Like, I don't buy like that.
Magic rubies.
Then there was trains of thought that, well, it's the people who fought, you know, who he jousted against were friends. They didn't want to defeat the prince because you don't want to defeat the prince. You don't want to be the guy that defeat him. They took it easy on him, et cetera, et cetera. I don't get that because how Barristan feels about it. Like you know, Barristan has that. Well, if I only could have won, feels like he wanted to win. So I don't buy
into
that.
It's not like
that.
He's the king. It's not unheard of for princes to enter these tournaments.
No, and the thing about Rhaegar is this. Yes, he's never really known to be like a warrior. He was never really known to be like an Arthur Dayne or even like a Robert Baratheon type warrior. But we do know something about Rhaegar is if he put his mind to something, he was very good at it.
Right.
He was good at everything.
If he felt he needed to do it, he had talent
and he was a jack of all trades to turn a talent. There wasn't just one thing he was good at. He was multi-talented person. So it's not the realm of possibility that he was trained, I'm sure, at being the prince. I'm sure he was being trained all his life to ride on horseback, practice sword fighting. He had these great knights. I mean, he had Arthur Dayne around him. I'm sure, you know, Arthur's like, here, Rhaegar, you're holding that sword wrong. You gotta hold it, hold it you this way.
Fucking idiot.
Yeah. Damn brat.
Do you know how old Rhaegar was when he had this change of...
I don't know the exact year, but it has to be before he met Elia, because he had the first thought that Aegon was the prince that was promised. So he had to have known this stuff beforehand. He had to know when he would always go to Summerhall and just write, you know, and sing songs and just mope there. So did something come in there at Summerhall that did he get a vision from the ghost of Highheart or, you know, the Jane from Old Town or whoever these people are,
right,
who are giving out these little subliminal visions and dreams and prophecies? It was definitely before his marriage with Elia.
The Knight in the Levantry won those rounds and he would have proceeded the next day.
Right.
But he was not there. He's disappeared.
Right. Two things. Probably he wanted to make sure that if he can win, that he would give Lyanna her due for doing what she did. But not many people will pick up on it. In a way, by giving her the rose, he's kind of acknowledging she was the knight. People picked up on it. But not many people did, but there is the possibility that someone did and told Aerys.
So basically, he entered himself in a tourney for her. Like, he kind of took her place in the tourney.
Yeah, like, you can't come back. Okay. You
can't come back. My father will kill you.
Yeah, I admire your bravery.
I would have won the tournament. I'll win it for you. Okay.
Along those lines.
Okay, I buy all that. I'm into it. Where does Lyanna fall in love with Rhaegar? Are we on the assumption that they both fall in love with each other here?
Right? I can't say the word love. I think that's way too early.
What other meanings do they have together?
That's it.
Exactly.
That's so, it up until 282-ish. Where Rhaegar runs off with her.
Which had to be planned.
It's possible. We talked about that before, that maybe.
Yeah. Well, you're in the assumption that they run off at the crossroads.
Right around that area. Yeah.
Which makes, that makes the most logistical sense, unless either of them are pulling like a Ned or a little
they're in that area. It's close to where Brandon would get married with Lysa Tully in the Riverland. It's in the Riverland area. I mean, when we say area, obviously it's still probably a good distance because, you know, it's not cars or planes or anything.
Right.
But it's not like she's up at Winterfell and he comes up, you know. It says 14 leagues. What's the definition of a league? Like, how many miles is actually a league? That way maybe we can kind of, maybe.
I always thought a league was more by sea. I thought.
Well, it says that she was taking 14 leagues.
Why are you fucking, like, fucking with me here? U.S. linear measure, one league was equal to 15,840 feet or 3 miles.
So 14 times three. That doesn't make any sense.
As cold winds hammered the city, King Ares II turned to his pyromancers, charging them to drive the winter off with their magics. Huge green fires burned along the walls of the Red Keep for a moon's turn. Prince Rhaegar was not in the city to observe them, however, nor could he be found in Dragonstone with Princess Elia and their young son Aegon. With the coming of the new year, the Crown Prince, so now we're going to 282.
Okay.
With the coming of the new year, the Crown Prince had taken the road with half a dozen of his closest friends and confidants on a journey that would ultimately lead them back to Riverlands. Not 10 leagues from Harrenhal, Rhaegar fell upon Lyanna Stark at Winterfell and carried her off, lighting a fire that would consume his house and kin and all those he loved, and half the realm besides. So nearly 10 leagues from Harrenhal. So 10 times 3, 30 miles from Harrenhal. We have Harrenhal right here.
Right.
And the end of the crossroads is northeast at a relatively short distance.
It's doable. Yes. What are you saying? It's doable.
Yes.
Okay.
Because I'm thinking myself, there's no way Winterfell is 30 miles from the other way.
No.
There's no way.
All right. It all makes sense. It's all doable. But the nuts and bolts of it, I'm talking about the humanity of it. We know Rhaegar's driven by prophecy, by something that he believes he needs to make come true.
And said right there that he took his closest friend and confidant, which means Arthur Dayne, Oswald. So something he knew he had to go up there for. As you said, were they in connection with, was he in connection with Lyanna? Did he maybe find out that Ares found, you know, was there something that he knew that made Lyanna could get in trouble? What was the physical drive, as you said, the physical force, what was the driving force, excuse me, that made him go up north to get Lyanna at that time?
Had it been planned. Had it been planned to look like a kidnapping. But what is the reason for it?
Well, now, you don't want to make a plan that was a kidnapping, because that's exactly what was being said.
But what else would it look like? Rhaegar strikes me as a smart man. Though anybody this obsessed with prophecy, you have to wonder about. Lyanna strikes me as a smart young lady. Was it a smart thing they did? Not really. No.
With Lyanna, to answer your question, I think we can look at it as maybe this is her way out. She's 15 years old.
She didn't want to marry Robert.
No. She's 15. She's 14 or 15 at this time.
Yeah.
She's a young girl. Rhaegar is like 22 and he's this...
Prince. All the maids seem to love him.
Yeah.
The song the night before made her cry.
It's easy to see him or her falling for him.
Yeah.
And not really realizing, like, he's married, we shouldn't do this.
But based on the amount of times that they saw each other, which, as far as we know, is just two times. Once, and then once when he, quote-unquote, kidnaps her, right?
Mm-hmm.
At what point did she make the decision that she's going to go with him and follow him to the ends of the earth?
We don't know.
We know it's one of two times, either.
Yeah. We don't know, like, what her real thought process was.
Here's what I imagine. Rhaegar goes looking for
this mystery knight, the Knight of the Laughing Tree. And he is doing it at his father's behest. And perhaps he's curious himself as to who this mystery knight is. Perhaps he saw something that he recognized. Whatever the reason, he does track down the Knight of the Laughing Tree.
He must take...
He has to take something. It's a prince.
I mean, yeah, but it doesn't matter who he brings, because they're going to follow his... Got to be people close to him. He finds that it's Lyanna, and he is shocked. And he maybe opens up with something like, you know, my father thinks you're an enemy to him. And she says, well, I'm not an enemy to him. I was just defending a Stark man. She tells the story of what happens. And Rhaegar sees bravery in that and willfulness. And we know that Lyanna's an attractive lady. We know that Rhaegar's looking for another piece of this puzzle that he's trying to put together, that he feels he has to put together. They have some long, drawn-out conversation. They identify with each other because they're both... Rhaegar is perhaps in a marriage that, while he loves her, it's not...
Still arranged. It's still...
It's arranged. It's not passionate. It's not true love.
It's not his choice. Lyanna was his choice.
Well, Lyanna is about to enter a marriage that's not her choice. And maybe they get to talking about that.
We have this thing in common.
They get to the point where he can't bring her back to his father. Not that he falls in love with her, but he has a lot of respect for her.
Right.
And he just doesn't want to do that. B... Think of all the problems that causes if he brings back Lyanna Stark. So he tells her to take off. And she's probably being willful and like a snotty teenage girl is probably like, I'm not going anywhere. I gotta go fight tomorrow. I gotta win this tournament. And he convinces her to leave by saying that this will cause so many problems if you come back. You leave, I'll enter the tournament. and I'll win it for you. And she's probably like, yeah, right, you're not going to win this tournament. He's like, I'll win this tournament for you. And when I win, I'll declare you Queen of Bone Beauty. And she say, there's no way that you would do that. You do that over your wife? And he's like, I promise you, I'll win this tourney and I'll declare you Queen of Love and Beauty. Then he comes back and he enters the tourney and he wins. And then he declares her the Queen of Love and Beauty. And that was his way of showing her that he's serious. Right? Because you can talk shit to a girl. You can say anything in the world. She can believe you or not believe you. But actions speak louder, way louder than words. So I'm sure they had a lot of words that night. But that action of declaring her the Queen of Love and Beauty once he had won. And doing it because he won it for her. She would, saying like, you would have won. Not that she would have, but this is your victory. So you're the Queen of Love and Beauty. More so than my wife. And maybe
Who's right there, by the way? She's three seats next to you.
Well, that's the thing. Like, he declares her love and beauty. And then I doubt they have much contact after that until, quote unquote, kidnapping. So I'm sure part of their conversation was, I mean, it had to have gotten to the point where he said, come away with me. And it had to be quick. Because it was just that one night. So it's not something planned where, well, what will your father do? I don't know, what will your father do? They had to figure out what was the best thing to do. And they both thought the best thing to do was to run away together. Not openly declare their love for each other. Not that it was even love at that point. But it had to be close for them to make a decision like this. It had to be. Leanna doesn't believe in this prophecy. And she's not going to believe in any prophecy that this guy tells her in one night. For Leanna, it had to be love. And she's 15. She's a 15-year-old girl. He is the crown prince. He is a passionate man, a talented man. He made her cry with his song. I can see Leanna falling in love with him in one night. I can see that. I can. Because as willful as she is, she's still a little girl. Rhaegar is looking at it from the prophetic point of view. This puzzle he's trying to put together. And he knows he needs this piece. Fire in the ice like you were talking about. Ilya can't have another child. He needs a third head for the dragon. Leanna makes the most sense to him. And his life work will be complete if he has another child with Leanna. For him, that's more important than anything else. So he probably makes plans to meet at the end of the crossroads. They probably talked about upcoming weddings with Brandon, and I'm sure they talked about so many things that night. Probably pulled an all-nighter. I'll declare you Queen of Love and Beauty. I'll win this tournament, declare you Queen of Love and Beauty, and if I do, I'll meet you at the crossroads. Maybe they didn't say it would be a kidnapping. Maybe they didn't even think about what other people would think once they were gone. It didn't seem like they thought about repercussions so much as Rhaegar was. He doesn't strike me as the kind of guy to be obsessed or infatuated, but driven by this prophecy and seeing an opportunity to add this piece to the puzzle, I could see him not thinking too much about repercussions and just about winning this tournament, getting her trust, and getting her...
Well, he says to Jaime when he rides off to the Battle of the Trident, he says to him, I should have called the council before, but there's no barter to go on. Roads not traveled. When I get back, there will be changes.
A council for what? Like a reference to his marriage? Second wife
now? Maybe say, listen, this is what I've done. It's not that I want to dishonor the Martell. I'm just, you know, making...
No, but you're making a lot of sense because Rhaegar is a thoughtful guy. And while I can see in that one moment, that one night, being caught up with a beautiful young girl and making all these promises, and then a couple weeks later following through, I can see him doing that. I can see any guy doing that. But the repercussions, he's going to eventually think of them. And obviously he sees what's going on. Like he did this announced like all out war. And he's like, what have I done? He should have called a council and he should have done this straight up. He's the crown prince. He can do it.
Right. This thing the show done. But you just said, oh my God, this is now a war. This is not the war I was thinking about. I'm thinking about another war.
More righteous than this.
Right. This is what I'm doing this stuff for. And it's very interesting in episode 3, season 6, episode 3, when Ned and meets up with Arthur Dayne, there is that term that the show keeps on using. Arthur Dayne says it to Ned, I wish you good fortune in the wars to come.
He says that in the show, yeah.
He says that in the show. Isn't it Mance Rayder that says it also? Someone else says it also.
Mance Rayder does say it.
It gets repetitive.
Melisandre says the wars to come also in season 2 after he uses the Blackwater.
Just by thinking that, he's probably thinking, didn't mean to start this war. I meant to
stop the Great War. The Great War. I meant to win.
That's the war that we have to worry about.
Interesting.
Very interesting. But the pettiness of the realm is like, right. Oh my God.
He was thinking that this was a righteous
thing. He was thinking further down. He was trying to
save the realm. Right. He was pulling the Jon Snow. He thought he was saving the realm by doing something that nobody else accepted.
Right. It's like Jon Snow saving the wildlings. I'm saving the wildlings. I'm saving them.
Like, Jon Snow doesn't understand why nobody can understand what he's doing. Like, how do you not get this? If they're on the other side, they're going to die, and they're going to come at us as
a lot of people don't catch it, that the connection, there's a good connection between John and Rhaegar and their leadership qualities.
Yeah.
Though very good leaders, their weaknesses with their leadership, they both make the same mistake, where John has a very hard time explaining his intentions with the wildlings. It's like Rhaegar not explaining his intentions with Lyanna and right. all that. And it ends up getting turned upside down on right. them. And they don't explain
they don't
themselves.
They don't explain
they just have it in their head what they're doing right. They don't, though, try to, like, convey it very well to, like, why they're doing it, why it is the right move.
And it comes back to them, and they yeah. don't even expect it. And Rhaegar is probably like, holy shit.
He thought he was going to come back from that war. He thought he was going to come back.
He thought he was going to come back, but that's probably the only reason that he even left Lyanna in the first place. Because now they're together for quite a few months, right? Yeah. I mean, not quite the full term, because he's gone, I'm sure he's gone for at least a month before she gives birth, right?
Because he's... Oh, that's way, yeah. He's gone, like, probably mid to late 282. He's probably with her for, like, 4 or 5 months while she's pregnant or something like that. And then the last 4 or 5 months, it's the war and everything else.
So what would bring him away from his new wife 4 or 5 months
pregnant? Orders from his father.
Orders from his father, but plus seeing everything that's going on and knowing it's because of him and Lyanna, which to him is the most pure and righteous thing ever in his life. Because it's something that he chose, that he feels is...
What was meant to be.
Was meant to be. Forces beyond his control, forces that control him, drove him to meet her. She loves him. He loves her. They've fallen in love more as they've been together. They're going to have a child. What the fuck would take him away from her but the guilt of being responsible for what is going on right. now in the realm?
Because Rhaegar was for the people. He didn't want people dying.
No. He wanted to stop war. He wanted to win war, like you said. And that's why he did it, but it caused the war. So he's got to go and clean up his mess. And it's the only... So, Arthur Dayne, my best friend, I need you to stay here.
Yeah. And Gerald Hightower, we said on the last
Well, then
podcast.
Gerald Hightower... Yeah, like we said that Arya sent Gerald Hightower to get Rhaegar.
Right.
Gerald Hightower gets there. He understands what's going on. Rhaegar explains it to him. Arthur Dayne obviously believes in Rhaegar.
Everyone believes in Rhaegar. So many people believe...
It's they like know, it's they like know Arya's is mad.
Yeah.
And they figure Arya's is King's Landing. Like, he's got Jaime there. I'm going to go win this war. Don't worry about my father. I'll go and deal with my cousin. You stay here.
I'm this isolated tower I need protected.
Yeah. I love her. I need you to stay here. This is...
Because they probably also didn't have a lot of men either. I mean, obviously, we saw it from the show. They didn't. It's not like they even had, like, a host of men. It was just 2 King's Guardmen and 3 King's Guardmen. It's like what Barristan says about Rhaegar. The people fought for Rhaegar because they loved him. They believed in him. He didn't have to do anything. They knew already kind of man he was.
People loved Rhaegar.
So they would fight for him. If Rhaegar went up there and says, you got to fight for me, then everyone would fight for him because everyone loved him. Definitely compared to what his father was. They said, oh my God, Rhaegar's not mad. He's not crazy. He's the heir. We should get this guy.
That is the best explanation for why Gerald Hightower stays at the Tower of Joy, is he believes in Rhaegar that much and is that disenfranchised with the Mad King's rule. He's not breaking an oath.
No, I hate to think that maybe that the Kingsguard would believe in prophecy and all that, but they believed in Rhaegar enough, and they believed in what he did to get with Lyanna and having this child, then they have to believe that this child was paramount.
I don't
his
know
protection
that so much as the wedding, as them being married.
Them being there, specifically Gerald Hightower, them being there, is that is a confirmed, legit, rightful heir is there also. But also the fact that 3 of them would stay there. Now one would be like, oh, should I accompany you back on the road? You know, he had no Kingsguard protection going back.
Well, I'm sure Gerald Hightower
had a host of 100 men or, 50 men or something
like
Rhaegar's
that. Rhaegar's like, I have fate on my side. I have destiny on my side.
Yeah, I think that's his downfall. Like, all right, Robert, come on, he's easy picking.
Fucking do this one-handed.
This guy's not the Knight's King.
Yeah.
Got him. It's okay.
Do this one-handed. Come on, Robert. Little does he realize how fucking angry Robert
is. Oh, shit, it's a Warhammer. Damn it. Yeah. I wasn't told about this.
I didn't know that he really used that.
And it's so funny, though, too, though. You think, like, obviously we talked about the Lyrian steel swords that Targaryens have. They're both missing. But it's like Rhaegar's weapon is just a normal, there's nothing special about that sword. It just...
Yeah, why didn't he have Dark Sister?
Yeah, like, well, I think George would write, like, another... The Targaryens, they had to go overseas and pay for, like, a missing Targaryen sword, and it's their new source.
Right.
You would just think, like, he would have, like, this, like, epic sword on him. But he doesn't. He's just a normal sword. And Robert's got this, like, 80-pound Warhammer,
There's no stopping that.
Yeah, sword. I mean, like you have to do is you have to pretty much be the aggressor. Wouldn't you think you'd have to like because you can't defend that. Right?
You'd have to get in close.
Yeah, you have to get in close. You can't defend. Like I'm trying.
No, you can't.
I mean, Warhammer is gonna smash that sword. You're the one who's gotta be the aggressor, like overhand attacks or trying.
Because it's gonna take him time. Even the big guy like Robert, it's gonna take him time to get
right. And you don't want to attack from below because if he blocks it below, then boom, right up top. So you have to. I have to imagine you gotta like. Meet his strokes like this and try to get him from the top. I mean, I'm not a swordsman and all that. I think Arthur Dayne would, that would be like, you know, I'm sure they talk strategy. So you go to Robert, he's got that Warhammer.
I don't know, because what battle had Robert fought before?
Yeah, like, does anyone even know he has a Warhammer?
I would think that, well, first off, you can't figure that they're going to meet in open field, because the way these wars are fought.
It's just like GMPA. It's the fact that these guys, it's like a movie.
It was.
That was a movie.
It was.
We always talk about there's like things that George R. Martin definitely had to think of, like a movie type scene. That's a movie.
Listen, it wouldn't surprise me at all if it turns out that the reality of that fight, being told by Robert, and only Robert, Rhaegar's not there to tell his side of the story. It would not surprise me at all.
Well, Ned said he saw the body, so.
No, he saw the body. No, that's not what I'm saying. But what I'm saying is, it may not have just been Robert versus Rhaegar. Like, it may have been Rhaegar versus, like, five fucking Northmen who were with Robert. Maybe that slowed him down, and Robert just came up and... Like, it may not have been just, like,
a epic fight. If that's the case, I would think that it's one-on-one. If that's the case, then it's like, fuck you, Robert Baratheon.
Completely. Well, exactly. But that's my point. Robert says that he killed Rhaegar on the Ruby Ford with his Warhammer. Sure. Maybe he did that, but...
I think you would have, like, someone say, you know, my father was actually the one who actually helped Robert. Because someone always talks. Mm. Especially a Northman, especially like a common man.
The brand new king?
Yeah. Like, see, someone's going to say, you know what? They'll let him take all the credit. I was there also. I kind of got a jib in on Rhaegar that distracted him or something like that. The fact that these guys would even meet.
But that's what I'm saying.
Is just very movie-esque. You only see that, like, in a planned movie.
You don't see that anywhere in A Song of Ice and Fire. Very rarely do you get those moments of just these perfect moments, that epic showdowns. You don't get
those. It's like with Rob and Jamie. Jamie is about to go up to Rob, like, you know, and try to end it right there, and also got cut off.
Right. In a movie, Rob's like, fuck yeah, come on. But in reality, no, that's our king. Keep him away.
Right. But the Battle of Troy goes against that. That totally feel like George is like, well, this is going to be a movie one day. I don't care what I say right now. It's going to be a movie. I'm going to make it into a movie. And they're going to have these 50,000 men, and all of a sudden it's gonna be like this.
But it works because it's a story that's being told.
It's poetic. Right.
But that's why I'm saying George Martin is. This wouldn't be the first time he'd done something like this. The tale of what happened is not really what happened, right?
That would be a twist. That would actually be a twist.
Yeah.
Because everyone just has it laying on their heads that Rhaegar injured Robert, but Robert killed Rhaegar.
For all of the reality that's put into this series, when Jon Snow beheads Janna Slynt, that's the only moment I can think of in five books that it's like both makes sense with the story we're being told, the style it's being told in, and what we want to see, right? It's not even a showdown. There's nothing like that. The Ned and Jaime fight in the show, you don't get that in the book because it's realistic. Things like that would not happen. It's small folk versus small folk, and the High Lords make the decisions. And if they're fighting, it's not a big problem because they're very well armored and they're fighting against usually small folk. Maybe once in a while a knight goes against a knight in open field, but Robert and Rhaegar, the likelihood of them meeting is so slim among all those people. Like they're just seeking each other out like it's fucking Willow and it's Mad Mardigan going for fucking General Kale or whatever his name is.
Great movie. Dude,
great battle scene. Awesome.
But my third favorite warrior of all time, probably Mad Mardigan.
Mad Mardigan.
Rhaegar
could use Mad Mardigan.
Yeah. Dude, you are great.
I'm just saying, I just thought of it now, and you know what, the more I think about it, the more it makes sense. I'm not saying Rhaegar didn't kill him. He definitely killed him.
Robert, you mean?
Robert, yeah. Robert definitely killed Rhaegar, but I doubt it was the showdown. A sword, a Valyrian steel sword, yeah, but any other sword, it can't stop a Warhammer. It can't. So you talk about the style he's got to go at him with, he's got to be real fast. And at that point in a battle, adrenaline pumping, no matter how good a warrior you are, it gets to a point where you're just kind of fucking slugging it out. And that's what these battles lasted hours and hours and hours. You're not shooting each other with guns, you're up there killing each other, and it's chaos. The Battle of the Bastards was the best depiction of battle in the whole series. Not the best battle, as far as I'm concerned, but the most realistic, because it's how it was. And amidst all that chaos, could you see having Tormund and the Small John meet? That's kind of like, all right, maybe at that point I could buy it, all these dead people everywhere, but it's just not likely. I could be wrong, I'm probably wrong. We'll probably never find out. It's textbook Martin to have the story and the lore not really be what happened.
In my eyes, that would be a huge twist.
Yeah.
You know, like, they're fighting and all of a sudden, like, you know, it was me!
Dude, I can even see, like, Robert killing the guy that killed Rhaegar to take credit. Robert was so fucking angry.
Did anyone see that? I got that, right?
We're not talking about love with Robert, remember?
Liana!
But that's what I'm saying, though. We go back to Robert, we talked about in one of the Ned Stark podcasts.
His pride.
His pride, but it wasn't love. He wasn't in love with Liana. It was infatuation. It was an obsession. You know when you get obsessed when you're infatuated with something and like you just it's all you're focused on. So all that anger is just focused on Rhaegar, and you see him and you see somebody else.
Because that
like, no, he's mine. Get the fuck.
Like if he was killed by someone else, not only does it take away from Robert, but it takes away from Rhaegar also.
Well, it does unless it's like five guys had him cornered or something.
If it's like one guy from like
he was fighting off guys, and Robert just came up from behind and like I said, just blasting him with the Warhammer. Like, he didn't even see Robert coming. Like, you get these big pictures of what happened. Great artwork, and it is fantastic artwork. You know which ones I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah, it's great.
Beautiful stuff. And it's such a storied battle. It's amazing. Not bloody likely, bro. Rhaegar is fighting off, and Robert comes up behind, and hey, motherfucker, he turns around, blasts him with the Warhammer. At the same time, Rhaegar went in there pretty confident. The whole point of doing this was I felt we should
taking ways away from that. Yeah,
we were too far away from that. Yeah. And I knew that we were going to go off like this on it. And I wanted to cover this before we put out the Lyanna part. Because
it's important because this sets up the Tower of Joy.
Right.
And this sets up everything with Robert and right with Ned and his post-Tower of Joy promise and keeping that promise.
Right. Also of note, Barristan Selmy and Ashara Dane. Barristan Selmy, I don't know if he met Ashara Dane at the Tourney of Harrenhal?
Well, even before that, I'm sure maybe he knew her because that Ashara Dane was a handsmaid to Elia, so...
She was always around King's Landing. Like his other sworn brothers of the King's Guard, Barristan was present at the Tourney of Harrenhal. He was infatuated, not in love, infatuated with the beauty of Lady Ashara Dane, though he knew...
Same term was used for Robert being infatuated with Lyanna.
Right.
So...
Barristan was realistic and he knew nothing could come of this because he... But he did plan on naming her Queen of Love and Beauty if he won the tournament. But he was unhorsed by Rhaegar Targaryen. So Selmy looks back on this, not so much jealous that he didn't get Ashara Dane, but more upset with himself how much trouble he could have saved if he did. Yeah, because that event is obviously looked at
kicking you off everything.
That is what tore the realm apart. Rhaegar naming Lyanna Stark the Queen of Love and Beauty.
So it's one of those defining moments in the story.
It should be noted, not that it has anything to do with Ned or Lyanna, but this was like you said, Went lacked the funding. Did you say it off air? No, you said it on air, but the Wents lacked the funding for the prizes and to put on the tournament.
So it's theorized that Rhaegar or something to the Targaryens were behind.
Right, and this is in the world of Ice and Fire, it looks like. Master Yandel suggests that Crown Prince Rhaegar Targaryen played Shadow Host. He was using the tournament as a pretext to meet with the High Lords to discuss removing his father as king in an informal great council. Many in attendance, when they saw the king show up, were shocked by his physical decline, and Aerys only attended the tournament because Varys warned him that his son arranged the tournament for this reason.
Mm-hmm.
Did he really? I don't think that's Rhaegar's style. Varys, what the fuck? Why is he doing this?
I just think between that, if he's already like trying to hint at... Bear with me. You know, Aerys trying to go up to King Aerys and try to pin him against Rhaegar. Then he's all singing, but then he's going to pin up Rhaegar's son. This everything just proves to me that he's a Blackfyre. He's trying to cause dissension with Aerys and Rhaegar, but then all of a sudden he's like, oh, yeah, this is Rhaegar's son. I'm going to make sure he's on the throne. No.
Mm.
To me, it's just all these little things that just, to me, prove that Aegon is not really Aegon.
Well, I mean, the show proves it for me. Otherwise, he would have been in it
if
he was Aegon. I can't think of anything else that needs to be noted here. Lord Tywin was not... During the tourney's opening ceremonies, Sir Jaime Lannister was admitted to the Order of Kingsguard, and Jaime wanted to compete in the tourney, but King Aerys commanded him to return to King's Landing that night and to guard Queen Rhaella and Prince Viserys. It doesn't really say who won all of the events, but it's not really important who won the events. The Blue Winter Roses, bro. That's not normally the crown that's given out at these tourneys.
What's normally the crown?
I don't know, but the Blue Winter Rose flower that grows in Glass Gardens in Winterfell, there's no way that's the usual crown. Again, that night, it must have been a long fucking night. It must have been an all-nighter.
And where's Rhaegar getting those blue roses from then?
There's no way that they met before this. There's no way. Not possible. As always, click subscribe. Please tell a friend about us. Check out the rest of the Ned Stark series, please leave a review for us on iTunes, on Stitcher, and you can also find us on Audioboom. Check out our Facebook page, www.facebook.com/ThePromisePrinces. And there it is. All right, we'll talk to you guys next week. Bum, 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 bum.